Position number 11940, reel 6.
Brigadier P.J. Jeffries, reel 6. Will you go on with your description of the role of the courier platoon, Brigadier?
As I remember it, the carrier platoon had two main tasks. Firstly, it was a mobile little force which the battalion commander could use either as a whole platoon or in sections, usually as a whole platoon, as a screen out in front or a screen behind if you were retreating, its advantage being its mobility. But one of the things I think that was forgotten in that role was that the carrier platoon, the carrier itself, was particularly vulnerable. It was very lightly armed, and it was totally open. So really, it was proof against small arms fire, unless the small arms fire was fired from higher ground. Its main task, and I'm afraid it's not often used in its main task, was as a mobile, little mobile force of firepower which could be sent to any position from which it could bring fire to bear. Remember, it didn't basically fire its weapons from the carrier. It was called a carrier because it carried a man and automatic weapon and rifles to a position from which it could fire. And it was extremely useful if applied in that way. But I think on the whole, it was used to push out in front as a reconnaissance vehicle. And I think we used up a lot of carriers unnecessarily in that role for which it is not entirely suitable. At the start of the Arras battle, I was sent with the 6th LI carrier platoon to the top of Vimy Ridge before the battalion started moving from the Le Bassé Canal area. In the afternoon, before the battle on the 21st, the afternoon of the 20th, I had the carrier platoon, and later on I had a company of infantry up there. Infantry company. And I took one carrier myself forward to find out what on earth was happening to the front where we were going to, I didn't know it, but where we did in fact have the battle the next day. And I pushed out into the deserted countryside in that carrier. And I realized then what a very unsuitable vehicle it was. It was armored, as I said, lightly. It was very noisy, so that if there'd been any Germans in front of us there, they'd have heard me coming all right. And we could have been absolutely dead meat. And I always thought about that afterwards when thinking about carriers. And I'm sure that as a reconnaissance vehicle, they are not thoroughly suitable. They're not as fast as scout cars. They're not as well armoured as scout cars. They haven't got any anti-tank weapon. So there we are.
What about the role of other specialist units within the battalion? Signals section.
We were terribly badly supplied with wireless at that time. So the signal section was largely dependent on line, which is no good in a mobile battle, and runners. The wireless sets we have, I think they were called a 12 set, and the 12 set was extremely unreliable. There was no wireless from battalion to company, and there was no wireless from company downwards. Of course, brigade had wireless down to battalions, but the wireless within the battalion was practically non-existent in those days.
Then this would be a handicap in a battle, for example, like Arras.
It's a terrible handicap, Harry. It is a dreadful handicap. It's a dreadful handicap. Of course, we were a not very well equipped territorial battalion, pitched straight into conflict with Rommel. Directly the BEF got home, the thing improved within months. And later in the war, I commanded the demonstration battalion, 70th Battalion, at Barnard Castle at the battle school. And of course, communications then were, first class. Of course, we were always demonstrating the communications as well, and we had them. So it was quite different then. And for the rest of the war, communications improved at a great rate. But in that first battle, communications were practically non-existent.
What was the situation with regard to the medical side of the battalion?
Well, we had an RAP, Regimental Aid Post, and it was effective. RAPs are always effective, like the health service always is, because it's a caring organization, and the men and the doctor in the RAP have always got a most vital job to do, and a job that calls out the best in people. So we had a very good medical officer, John Hislop, and a good medical section, and they did well.
What about a man's spiritual needs?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer.
You would have a chaplain.
We had a chaplain. And if you have a good chaplain, and he's got to be frightfully good, he's got to have the common touch, and he's got to be thoroughly accepted, and his whole mission accepted by the men. If you have that, then I think the spiritual strength that he may in gender is of priceless value. But we weak, materialistic, phlegmatic people tend, I think, not to be very religious. However, when I say we're not religious, it doesn't mean that we haven't got spiritual values. And spiritual value in trouble, particularly on active service, is of the greatest benefit. There can be no doubt about it. There are some tough chaps who can do without it. But by and large, I'm sure it helps considerably.
And who was the chaplain to your battalion at this time?
We had a chap, a cousin of the late Dean of Durham, called Wilde. And Wilde was our chaplain for some time before the battles. But somehow he didn't stay very long with us. However, there was at brigade headquarters a Roman Catholic priest. And of course I knew his name well, but I've now forgotten it. And he was of the greatest value throughout the brigade. He'd come to battalions, he'd even go to companies. He was marvellous if you went to brigade headquarters, full of cheer, gutful as anything, a very great man. Got the MC? Oh yes, he was fine. He uplifted everybody that he came in contact with. Wonderful chap.
So you basically had a mixture of these. You had a mixture of the good and the indifferent.
I admit the good and the indifferent.
Was there any other specialist unit with the battalion? Did you have a pioneer element in your battalion?
No. I don't think we had anything else. No.
So, we're at Fresnes Lez Sart, and you're moving on into France. Where do you go from here?
We went to a place called Tourouvre. Which was further east from Fresnes. Fresnes was pretty close to the coast. We went on to Tourouvre. I don't remember much about Tourouvre. Of course, we got better at competing with life in French towns as time went on. Tourouvre was all right. And after Tourouvre, we will move to Molliens-Vidame. The thing about Molliens-Vidame, I remember, was that it was in the Corn part of northern France. And the extent of the rolling corn fields struck me constantly there. We ran into fairly good weather when we were at Molliens-Vidame, and we trained quite hard there. I suppose, really, it was the most valuable station that we had on our way up, because soon after that, we moved to Emmerin. And Emmerin was just outside... was just outside Lille, and we ran into really training bother there, because quite erroneously, the high command, French and English, had considered that the great anti-tank trench running north and south through Lille would be a good thing. So instead of training the whole time we were at Emera, we dug this damn trench. Our training suffered, our fitness suffered, our morale suffered. Every day, companies went out to this rotten ditch and dug in the wet. The people of Emera were very nice and kind, kinder than we'd met before. As an illustration of that, we had our band with us, you know. And when the phony war ended and the fighting started, and we moved forward eastwards from Emera, we left the band instruments with the mayor. We never thought anything more about them until the end of the war. About 2 years after the war ended, a letter came from the mayor of Emera through the war office to the officer commanding the 6th Battalion, saying that since we left band instruments with them in 1940, they had been preciously guarded, and would we now come and fetch them? So, of course, a great ceremony was made, and the band instruments were fetched from Emera with great pomp and lots of celebration.
can I just ask you at this stage, before we go on to the next phase, which is really when the Germans started the invasion, what was the Russian situation? Was it improving at all?
Oh, yes. It was a bit better. Oh, yes, as the war went on, you could complain less. No doubt about it. As was only natural. I mean, everything improved. Equipment improved. Weapons improved. Wireless improved. Food improved. Clothes improved. Oh, yes. But remember, 1940, things were pretty basic in every way. And the food, yes, it was improving. Oh, yes, it was improving.
You were at Emeran, were you, until the German invasion?
Yes.
So what can you recall what you were doing at the moment that occurred?
Well, you'd hardly credit it. The colonel was on leave, and I was sitting in the office the day before the balloon went up. It was just about dinner time. And I was looking at my watch and thinking, well, I've got a lot of paper in front of me, but I think I'll fold it up, go to the mess. And a rather smart officer knocked at the door and came in. And he said, can I speak to the commanding officer? He was a major, I think. So I said, yes, I'm the commanding officer. My colonel's on leave. He said, the commander-in-chief is outside. He'd like to see you. This was the great General Gort. So I went out and saluted. And he said, you've got a good battalion. So I said, yes, very good, sir. He said, could you take me to one of the dining halls? Men will be eating now, won't they? Yes, I said. Right. He went along. He went into the dining hall. He was very good. He talked to the men individually, went down the tables, asked them what the food was like. They were very polite. and so on. Then he came out to me and he said, what do you do with all your rubbish? So I said, we have a rubbish area and incinerators and all that sort of thing. He said, show me. Emirat is a straggling sort of village. And of course I was always going round it, but I couldn't remember where Frank Robson, the quartermaster, had the incinerators, whether it was first on the left and then round the back of St. Houses, or whether it was second on the left and round the back of St. Houses. I thought, well, this is pretty difficult. Yes, sir, follow me. So we walked. And as I came to the first turning to the left, I said to myself, well, Jeffries, this is where you win or lose. We'll take this turn. And if the incinerators are there, we win. If not, we lose. We walked down and we came around the corner. And there, smoke puffing out of the top of them with the incinerators. I always remember that because whether it's in Lord Gort's favour or disfavour, here was the Commander-in-Chief bothering about the incinerators in one of his battalions when the great move of the whole German army across Europe was just starting up its engines. Wonderful.
So, the German invasion came, and what happened to your role then?
Well, the German invasion came, and after three days, we were ordered to go up and to take up positions on the Belgian frontier, round about the town of Grammont.
Sorry, do you recall the date of the invasion?
It was the 18th. I think the invasion started on the 13th. But I think this was about the 18th. I think that is it. Oh yes, we moved by transport. And I recollect quite well parading the battalion. The colonel hadn't come back from leave. Paraded the battalion in the square at Emirat. And got everybody into their vehicles. And waited for our place in the column going east. And of course the battalion had a great laugh because I was standing there and there was a rather well-known lady of uneasy virtue standing there. And just before we went off, she came up to me and she said, good luck, Colonel. Please, take no unnecessary risks. I'd never spoken to her before, I have to tell you that.
And you moved into Belgium?
We moved to Belgium. It took us not very long, I suppose 4 or 5 hours. And we went up. And I forget how we disposed the companies. But there was a canal in front, and they were told to dig in, and round the canal and at the bridge. The bridge was left standing, I may say, when we first got there. I think we were there for about 2 days. And the bridge eventually was blown because news then came back of the French withdrawal on our right, and the Belgians on our left are also showing signs of panic.
Can I ask at this stage, this would be the River Don, right?
This, I think, was the Don, on the Grammont, I think it's on the Don.
Digging in. Can you describe what digging in was? Because it wasn't the old First World War type of digging into a long trench, was it?
Well, Harry, we'd done very little, given very little thought to digging in. All in those days that one thought of was digging a hole to shelter yourself from air blitz and artillery fire. But on this occasion, we presumably were going to have to defend this river. So you must dig weapon pits as hard as you could, because it's better to defend from a pit than to lie on the open. Simple as that. But I may say I don't think we were very skilled. Very little thought had been given to that sort of operation. That's to say, the defending of a prepared position.
Have you had very much in the way of air activity around you?
I don't recollect that there was very much air activity at that time. No, that was all to come shortly. But at that time, there was practically no air activity, I think.
And was it a similar situation with refugees? Were they beginning to...
No, there were no refugees. No, there was no movement then.
So how long were you on this river line then, Brigadier?
As far as I can recollect, it would be 2 days. And that was concluded by one of those dreadful midnight conferences that I was called to at Brigade. And for the first time, the news was spilt that the French were on the retreat, the Belgians were on the retreat, and if we stuck out here in front, we'd be showed up. And so, although no move was to be made, we would be prepared to move sharp back. Not anywhere particular, just back. And so it wasn't very cheerful news that I, as the acting CO, was able to give to the company commanders. But I could tell them to stop digging. I think it would be the next day, late the next day, the order to retreat was made.